And good Tuesday afternoon. Yeah, another beautiful day that we have enjoyed. Yeah, it is getting warm, and it has been very warm. What, 27 degrees right now? Woke up this morning. How often do you go out your door and you think, oh, it's a fresh morning? No, it was already 18 degrees, so that is pretty crazy. I also woke up and walked out my back door and didn't see any chickens. You know, we've had this conversation before about some people would like to be able to raise chickens in their backyard. And in my weaker moments, I would have to agree, I'd be all in favor of that. It would be kind of cool if you want your morning eggs to go out and just grab your eggs from your own chicken coop. But we know that even in this city, there has been a lot of pushback on that idea. And we're nowhere near having chickens in our backyard. But I wanted to talk with my guest this half hour, Sean Courage, and he is Associate Professor of Canadian Environmental History in the Department of History at York University, joining us today. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Angela.
And the reason I want to talk to you is because the whole idea of urban livestock, it goes way back, but it's interesting what we are seeing in modern times now in the last 10, 15 years, where people are trying to embrace the idea of raising their own animals, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's a number of different groups across Canada, the United States, parts of Europe, and elsewhere that are advocating for being permitted to allow to raise chickens in cities.
Is there anything else? I always just hear about urban chickens. Have you heard of any other animals that people would be interested in raising?
I haven't heard of any groups that are successful in advocating for the introduction of other animals. I've seen some groups talking about using sheep or goats for landscaping in parks,
yeah,
but not for individual households. The chicken seems to be the one that's most prominent, in part because it's an animal that's a lot easier to raise for an individual family in a city than a much larger animal.
Funny you say it's a lot easier to raise, but that doesn't make it easier to get the regulations in place or to get
That's right.
council in different cities on board. And I like the fact that you've kind of looked way back to the 19th mm-hmm. century, how even back then municipalities were still kind of wrestling with how they would deal with this. But we probably have to go back even further because long before there were cities, it was just rural communities and farms.
Yeah, over the course of the 19th century in Canada, in cities, Canadians raised livestock animals, horses, pigs, cows, sheep, goats, chickens. And over the course of that century, governments in Montreal and Winnipeg and Toronto and Vancouver and Calgary had to come up with rules and regulations to govern those animals because they found that there were certain environmental challenges to having those animals in cities and property challenges related to having those animals in cities. So any discussion about urban chickens today, of course, has to take into consideration regulation.
Yeah, and really when we talk about back then, we saw farms and farmland suddenly being swallowed up by smaller towns, which then became cities. So you can see why you still had some residents holding on to that, the animal husbandry, and why they wanted to continue to do that. But in you recently examined this, looking at Montreal, Toronto, and Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And are you saying that some of the things we have trouble with currently, it was the same thing back in the 19th century?
Yeah, so I looked at recently looked at Edmonton's pilot program for urban chickens and saw the preliminary regulations there reflect a lot of the regulatory problems that municipal governments faced in the 19th century and developed regulations to try to overcome. So the first one was related to property and trespass. You know, these animals don't always stay where you want them to stay. They sometimes wander around and trespass onto someone else's property and sometimes cause damage. So cities had to come up with rules for liability on who is responsible for the damage of stationary property, but also who is responsible for damage to the animals themselves, because they were property too. They also had to regulate for environmental pollution, so the waste that the animals produced, and they had to regulate for the potential spread of disease and how to maintain an urban livestock herd while also protecting human health.
Sean, as we say, we're talking just about urban chickens, but back mm-hmm. then, are you saying that it was larger livestock that they were dealing with?
Yeah, absolutely. So the horse population, of course, in these cities was enormous. Toronto had the largest urban horse population. By 1891, there were over 7,400 horses counted in the census in Toronto that year. Because, of course, they provided all of the transportation in the city. They powered the street railway system. They hauled all of the ordinary goods from place to place within the city. And the chicken population in the 19th century was also growing in places like Montreal, Toronto, and Winnipeg. But the other animals that people kept went into decline. So over time in the 19th century, people kept fewer pigs in cities. People kept fewer sheep in cities, in part because municipalities created regulations to exclude those animals, but also because they were really inconvenient to keep, and there wasn't an economic reason that you would raise a sheep herd in an increasingly densifying urban environment.
Yeah, so you obviously just had to find something that you could raise that didn't take up as much space but still gave you the benefits, although then obviously the horse probably naturally declined as well as we saw more a movement towards motor vehicles.
That's right. So the horse became obsolete as a technology of transportation, but the chicken continued to be beneficial because it was small, it was easy to raise for a working class family, and it provided food for people, mainly in the form of eggs. Canadians didn't eat chicken meat in large volumes until after the Second World War. And so a family could raise eggs to feed themselves, or they could sell those eggs in a local market to make money.
Now you have to be very specific when you say, and I know you're looking at different major centers that you were looking at back in the 19th century, but let's focus on chickens and chicken regulations. Is there some regulations you saw back then that municipalities could apply to today? Talked about the environment.
Yeah, that's right. So all the three cities that I've looked at had to standardize regulations for the removal of animal manure. And this was, you know, a concern for public health and environmental pollution. There was concerns about the contamination of well water. So I think any introduction of a new species to an urban environment, of course, has to consider waste management for public health purposes. And then there are these other consequences of urban livestock, I guess, that when you think about large numbers of animals living in a dense environment, it doesn't necessarily occur to you, what do you do with all those bodies when they die? So in Montreal, the police were responsible for removing dead animal carcasses from the streets and sidewalks. So again, an urban chicken policy would have to take into account the removal and disposal of animal carcasses, I think.
Of a dead chicken, yeah.
Environmental pollution, yeah, that's right.
You said you looked at Edmonton's policy as they look at their pilot project. Were you able to sort of look and see, okay, that's how they've determined they're going to deal with the waste, and how similar it could have been to what they were looking at many years ago?
Yeah, there is one policy that's really similar. In Edmonton, the pilot families that wanted to raise chickens had to get permission from their neighbors to do so. And this became common in the late 19th century for people who wanted to keep cows in Toronto and Montreal and Winnipeg. They, in some cases, needed written consent from neighbors to keep the animals on their properties. So you see a concern about relationships between neighboring property owners and concerns about what kind of smells might come from keeping animals on your property. So the concerns of Canadians in the 19th century have these kind of echoes today in the present in the urban chicken debate.
I can't imagine how big their properties were that they'd have a couple of cows and have to ask their neighbors, you know. But especially if it was a dairy cow, that would provide the milk. You can see the benefit there, but when you're looking at some other cattle, that's kind of questionable. Did they actually deal at all in the 19th century with just numbers, with how many you could have? Because I think that's another thing in, you know, now in the 21st century that we're saying, if we even have this idea of urban chickens, how many would a neighbor be allowed to have?
That's right, yeah. So in Toronto, for example, in the 1880s, the city started to set number restrictions on how many animals you could keep on a property. So again, in the case of a cow, they limited it to a maximum of two on a property that was rather large, right? So you had to have it at a minimum distance away from a public street.
Mm-hmm.
So that really moved that practice to the outer fringes of the city, the kind of suburban margins of the city, rather than the dense parts in the city center. The same was true for pigs. They limited the numbers of those animals. The smaller animals, like chickens, were almost entirely unregulated in the 19th century, which is really interesting. They were either ignored or they weren't seen as problematic as these larger animals.
And I'm not up to date on the Edmonton pilot project because I just know that Calgary were, you know, it's not going anywhere. But do they have restrictions on numbers of how many chickens people could have in the pilot project?
Yeah, that's right. I believe so. So there's limited numbers depending on the size of property. Requires the consent of neighbors.
Yeah.
They're subject to inspection by public health officials. And again, that's an interesting echo of the 19th century. Very similar. Public health inspectors used to investigate stables for horses and cattle and pigs on people's property if they kept them. Made sure that they're properly drained and ventilated and stuff like that.
And, Sean, I know your study was focused more on the 19th century, but do you know when really Canada got rid of any type of urban livestock?
Yeah, so by the end of the 19th century, livestock husbandry was still permissible in all three of these cities, except in the case of pigs in Montreal, which were totally prohibited.
Yeah.
But I believe in most of these cities, people continued to raise livestock animals for the rest of the 20th century. Now, in some cases, they did so surreptitiously in contradiction to the law.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, in the case of Toronto, it was right up into the late 20th century that people were permitted to keep chickens in the city. So it's a practice that isn't that old. And I think a lot of listeners might ask a grandparent if they had raised animals in maybe suburban Calgary in the mid-20th century. I know a lot of friends who I grew up with in Vancouver, where I grew up, their new neighbors and friends and family in the mid-20th century, in the post-war period, who kept chickens in the suburban areas of Vancouver.
I think it's cool. I'd like some chickens, and I'll have a couple of beehives, too. I'll see how my neighbors like that.
Yeah, I won't even get into the urban beekeepers, but of course there were lots of those in the 19th century too.
No kidding. Sean, thanks so much for your time today. Really interesting study.
Thank you.
Sean Courage, he's Associate Professor, Canadian and Environmental History in the Department of History at York University. And I'm going to take a break here.